Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a really interesting intersection: your rights as a property owner versus the rules of community living, specifically within the world of condominium associations.
Mm-hmm.
We're diving deep into the case of Obuck v. Cottonwood Village Condominium Association. You've given us some fantastic resources to work with, including detailed case analyses and even some podcast-specific insights alongside the standard briefs.
Exactly. It's a rich set of materials that will allow us to really, you know, dissect this case and understand its nuances.
So let's set the scene for a moment. Imagine you purchase a condo, and a significant factor in your decision is the ability to use a TV antenna, maybe prefer free over-the-air broadcast.
Yeah, that happens.
Then a few years down the line, the HOA suddenly implements a complete ban on all roof antennas. Fair play. What are your options? What legal standing do you have? That's sort of the core of what we're going to unpack in this deep dive.
Precisely. This 1988 decision from the Alaska Supreme Court offers crucial guidance on how courts tend to approach these kinds of conflicts. Our goal today is, well, to extract the fundamental legal principles that govern HOA rulemaking by thoroughly examining the arguments presented and the court's reasoning in the Obuck case.
Okay, let's get into the specifics then. What exactly transpired at Cottonwood Village that led to this legal battle?
Okay, so back in 1981, John and Janie Obuck made the decision to purchase a unit in the Cottonwood Village condominium complex. Now, a key element that influenced their purchase was the presence of an existing shared roof antenna system for television reception. It was, for them, a significant amenity that was, you know, part of the offering when they bought.
So they bought in with a reasonable expectation of continued antenna access, it sounds like.
Yeah.
What triggered the change then?
Several years later, in 1984, the condominium board decided to institute a blanket prohibition on all antennas mounted on the roof. Their stated rationale was twofold. First, they had experienced recurring problems with roof leaks that they directly attributed to the installation and subsequent maintenance-related foot traffic associated with these antennas.
Okay, leaks, that makes sense.
And second, they expressed concerns about the overall visual appeal and consequently the marketability of the units if individual antennas were, well, proliferating across the roofs.
I can see the HOA's perspective there, aiming to protect the property and its value for everyone. But how did they propose to handle the existing antenna setup? Did they just ban them?
No, they didn't simply issue a ban without offering an alternative. The HOA proposed to cover the cost of removing the existing antennas, and importantly, they agreed to provide basic cable television hookups for one television set in each unit.
Okay, so it wasn't a complete denial of television service then. What then was the specific sticking point for the Obucks?
Well, the Obuck situation had a critical distinction. They desired antenna reception for not just one, but for three additional television sets within their condominium unit.
Oh, three more TVs.
Right. To obtain cable service for these extra TVs, they would incur an additional monthly charge of $30. Their objection wasn't about being able to watch TV at all. It was about the added expense of having to subscribe to cable for their other sets when they had previously relied on and preferred, you know, using antennas.
Got it.
So for you as a potential condo buyer, this highlights the importance of understanding not just what amenities exist, but also the potential for future changes and the costs associated with them.
So it became a financial issue for them, really, a matter of that added expense. Mm-hmm. And that's what prompted them to take legal action.
Precisely. Feeling that this outright ban was unreasonable and that it infringed upon what they believed were their property rights, the Obucks decided to file a lawsuit against the Cottonwood Village Condominium Association.
All right, the Obucks took them to court. What were their primary legal arguments? Let's start with this concept of an easement they claimed. What was that about?
Okay, so the Obucks put forward the argument of an easement by estoppel. In essence, they contended that they had relied on the developer's initial provision of the shared antenna system and the implicit understanding that continued antenna access would be available when they made the decision to purchase their unit.
Right.
They felt this created a kind of implied ongoing right for them to use antennas. Like, you let us think this was okay, so now it has to be.
And how did the court interpret that argument? Did they agree that this initial setup created a lasting legal right? Like, Was that enough?
The court, however, was not convinced. Their reasoning was that general assurances, or expectations arising from a developer's initial marketing or setup, are typically insufficient to establish a legally binding easement.
Mm-hmm.
Easements, which grant the right to use another's property for a specific purpose, generally require either explicit legal documentation, such as a grant in the deed, or a clear demonstration of long-term, continuous, and obvious reliance that wasn't adequately proven in this particular case.
Okay.
So the key takeaway here for you, maybe as a student, is to always rely on the formal documents, the condo declaration, not just what the developer might, you know, say casually.
That makes sense. You can't really build a permanent legal claim on something that wasn't formally documented, like a handshake deal almost.
Yeah.
Were there other factors that weakened their easement argument in the eyes of the court?
Absolutely. A critical point was that the original condominium declaration, which serves as the foundational legal document outlining the community's rules and regulations, already granted the condo board the authority to manage and regulate the common areas of the property.
Which includes the roof.
Which would certainly include the roof, exactly. This pre-existing power of the board to make rules concerning the common elements significantly undermined the OBUC's argument that they had an unfettered right to utilize that space for their private antennas based just on those initial implications.
What about the OBUC's perspective that antennas were, in a way, a necessity for them to enjoy television?
Yeah.
Did that factor into the court's decision on the easement claim at all?
Yeah, the court did address that aspect. They concluded that the OBUC's need for antennas wasn't considered legally critical because a reasonable alternative was available, namely cable television service.
Even though it cost more.
Right. While it did entail an additional cost for the extra television sets, the existence of this alternative meant that they weren't being entirely denied access to television. In the court's view, their argument primarily boiled down to a preference for the cost-free antenna option rather than a complete lack of access to television service. It was about cost, not access.
Okay, so the easement argument didn't hold up for them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's now delve into the central question the court addressed. Was the HOA's ban itself a reasonable exercise of their authority?
Yeah.
What legal standard did the court employ to evaluate that?
Right, this is key. The court applied what is commonly known as the business judgment rule. This is a standard legal principle that courts often use when reviewing decisions made by governing bodies, such as corporate boards, or in this context, a condominium association board.
The business judgment rule.
Exactly. So for you sitting on an HOA board, perhaps, this means your decisions, as long as they have a legitimate purpose and are reasonable, will likely be upheld by the courts as a degree of deference.
Okay, so what does the business judgment rule actually mean in practical terms when we're talking about an HOA making a rule like this antenna ban? What specific aspects did the court consider?
Well, for the antenna ban to be deemed valid under the business judgment rule, the court essentially assessed two key criteria. First, did the rule serve a legitimate purpose for the Cottonwood Village Homeowners Association?
A valid reason.
Yes, a valid reason. And second, was the rule itself a reasonable means of achieving that legitimate purpose? Was it connected to the goal?
Okay, let's revisit those purposes then. What were the HOA's stated reasons again for implementing the ban?
As we discussed earlier, their primary justifications were twofold. First, to prevent recurring roof leaks that they had linked to the installation and maintenance of antennas, including, you know, the foot traffic involved.
Just structural integrity.
Exactly. Second, they aimed to preserve the overall property value and marketability of the condominium units by presenting a more consistent and aesthetically pleasing appearance, free from individual antennas on the roofs. The curb appeal argument.
So the court had to weigh those stated reasons, leaks and looks, against the impact this ban had on the OBUCs. How did that balancing act play out in the court's decision?
Precisely. The court had to balance the HOA's legitimate interests in safeguarding the structural integrity of the property and maintaining its value for all owners against the burden that the rule imposed on the OBUCs, which in this instance was, well, that additional $30 per month expense for cable service on their other televisions.
Right.
Ultimately, the court concluded that because this cost was relatively minor when weighed against the potential for preventing structural damage from leaks, which could affect all unit owners, and the benefits of preserving property values for the entire community, the rule was deemed reasonable.
And there's a really significant quote from the court in this case that really encapsulates their thinking, isn't there? It touches on this idea of aesthetic differences.
Yes, that's a crucial point to remember. The court stated quite unequivocally that unit owners may not rely on courts to strike down reasonable rules over aesthetic differences.
That's blunt.
It is. This really underscores the principle that courts are generally going to grant a certain level of deference to the decisions made by HOA boards, particularly when those decisions are rooted in legitimate concerns such as property maintenance and overall community appearance, and when the impact on individual owners is not unduly severe.
So
as a condo owner, you might not always get your way on purely aesthetic preferences if the HOA has a reasonable basis for its rules. You can't just say, "I don't like how it looks."
So it wasn't just about the potential for leaky roofs then. The curb appeal and marketability aspect also played a significant role in the court's finding of reasonableness. It wasn't just a cover story.
Absolutely. The court specifically acknowledged this dual rationale, both the concern for the structural integrity of the buildings by preventing leaks and the desire to maintain curb appeal and, consequently, marketability. This two-pronged justification significantly bolstered the HOA's position in the eyes of the court. Both reasons were seen as legitimate.
It's interesting to consider the timeline again. The O-Bucks made their purchase under a different set of rules regarding antennas, right? Does the fact that the rules change after they bought their unit carry any legal weight in this kind of situation? Does that matter?
Well, while the court certainly acknowledged that the O-Bucks initially bought their unit in a context where antenna use was permitted, they nonetheless upheld the later enacted rule. This really highlights the evolving nature of community living within condominiums. The prevailing legal view is that as a community matures and faces new challenges or revises its priorities, the governing body, the HOA board, generally possesses the authority to adapt and create new rules, provided they are reasonable and serve a legitimate purpose. So this is something anyone considering buying into a condo association should be aware of. Rules can change. It's not set in stone forever.
That brings up a really important point, though. Is there a limit to what an HOA can deem reasonable? Are all types of rules treated with the same level of judicial deference, or is it different for different kinds of rules?
That's a crucial question to consider, definitely. The court implicitly operates on a sort of sliding scale when it comes to the reasonableness test. A rule that significantly impinges upon fundamental rights. Think about restrictions on freedom of speech or religion, for instance, would face a much, much higher level of scrutiny from the courts.
Okay, much stricter.
Right. The HOA would need to demonstrate a very compelling and narrowly tailored justification for such a rule. However, rules that deal with the more day-to-day aspects of community living, such as aesthetic standards, pet regulations, or building maintenance, tend to be given more deference by the courts, as long as they are not arbitrary, discriminatory, or unduly burdensome on individual owners and serve a legitimate purpose for the community as a whole.
So antenna rules fall more into that second category, maintenance, aesthetics?
Generally, yes. Less fundamental than, say, free speech.
Okay. Let's shift our focus slightly now and discuss the legal aftermath of this case. The O-Bucks were ultimately required to pay a significant portion of the HOA's legal fees, correct? That must have stung.
Yes, that's right. The court issued an order requiring the O-Bucks to cover 80% of the Cottonwood Village Condominium Association's legal expenses incurred in the lawsuit. That's a pretty significant chunk.
80%.
Yeah. It's a noteworthy aspect of the case for anyone considering legal action against their HOA. It can get expensive, even if you think you're right.
Why were the O-Bucks held responsible for such a large portion of the legal fees? Did they argue that they were fighting for a broader principle that should exempt them from this? Like, this wasn't just about them?
They did indeed argue that there should be considered public interest litigants under Alaska state law. This designation often provides protection to individuals or groups who bring lawsuits that, you know, benefit the broader community, potentially exempting them from having to pay the opposing side's legal fees, even if they are unsuccessful in their case.
Right, like fighting for everyone.
Exactly. However, the court ultimately rejected this argument in the O-Bucks situation.
What was the court's reasoning in denying them this public interest litigant status? Why didn't they see this as a matter of public benefit for the condominium community?
Well, the court's determination was that the O-Bucks' primary motivation in bringing the lawsuit was their own private economic benefit, essentially. Their desire to have antenna access for their multiple television sets without having to incur the additional cost of cable service.
Back to the $30 a month.
Right. While the outcome of the case might have had some implications for other condo owners regarding HOA rulemaking authority, The court did not perceive the Obucks' primary goal as being to advance the overall welfare or legal rights of the Cottonwood Village condominium community as a whole. Because their aim was viewed as primarily a personal financial one, they did not meet the criteria to be classified as public interest litigants under Alaska law and were therefore liable for a significant portion of the HOA's legal expenses. It was seen as a private dispute, mainly.
Okay, we've covered a lot of important legal ground here. This case is really packed with lessons. What would you say are the most critical key takeaways for our listeners, especially law students, to understand from the Obuck v. Cottonwood Village case?
Yeah, there are several really crucial principles that emerge from this case. First, there's a general tendency of courts to defer to the rulemaking authority of homeowners associations, particularly when those rules represent a reasonable balancing of collective benefits for the community against what are considered to be relatively minor individual burdens, especially, like we said, in areas concerning property maintenance and aesthetic standards.
Right. The courts are not typically going to step in and second guess every decision an HOA makes about, say, paint colors or, in this case, antennas.
Exactly. Second, this case powerfully illustrates the importance of formal property rights. Promises or understandings that aren't formally documented, such as those assurances from a developer during the sales process, do not automatically create legally enforceable rights like easements.
Yeah, get it in writing.
You need it in writing. These types of rights generally require clear and formal documentation within the official property records or the condominium declaration itself.
So the lesson there is, don't rely on verbal agreements or assumptions. Look for it in writing in the official documents.
Precisely. Third, the concept of reasonableness in the context of HOA rules is not a simple yes or no determination. It's nuanced. Courts actively engage in a balancing process, weighing the legitimate interests that the HOA is seeking to protect against the extent of the impact the rule has on individual property owners. A minor inconvenience, like the $30 cable fee here, is far less likely to invalidate a rule than a significant infringement on a fundamental right.
That sliding scale idea we discussed earlier depends on what kind of right is affected.
Exactly. And this leads directly to the fourth crucial takeaway. The condominium declaration is an absolutely vital document. Before purchasing a unit in a condominium community, it is essential to thoroughly review and understand this document.
Read the fine print, basically.
Absolutely. It lays out the fundamental rules of the community, including the powers and limitations of the HOA board. Knowing what you are agreeing to is paramount to avoiding potential disputes down the line.
So it really comes down to a trade-off. When you choose to live in a condominium, you gain the benefits of community living and shared amenities, maybe a pool or landscaping, but you also inherently give up some degree of individual autonomy in exchange for those benefits. You can't just do whatever you want.
Absolutely. That's the core bargain. And as Justice Rabinowitz astutely observed in the court's opinion, unit owners consciously sacrifice freedom of choice to promote the peace of mind of the majority.
Wow.
That statement really encapsulates the fundamental nature of condominium living and the legal framework that governs it. You're part of a collective.
This has been a truly insightful deep dive into the Obuck v. Cottonwood Village case. Just to quickly summarize the core lessons for you listening. Courts generally respect HOA authority when rules reasonably balance community benefits with individual burdens. Formally documented property rights are essential. The assessment of reasonableness is a nuanced balancing act. And thoroughly understanding your condo declaration before you buy is absolutely critical.
That's an excellent summary. And it really highlights how property law adapts to the unique dynamics of communal living. It's not quite the same as owning a detached single-family home.
So as we bring this deep dive to a close, here's a final thought for you to consider. Given the rapid and ongoing advancements in technology and the constantly evolving landscape of community living, think about things like solar panels, EV chargers, maybe even drone deliveries. How might the reasonableness test that we've discussed today be applied to future disputes involving entirely new forms of communication, shared resources, or even shifting lifestyle expectations within condominium and other community living settings?
That's interesting.
It's a really interesting area to think about as these communities continue to adapt and regulations try to keep pace. Where does the line get drawn next time?
A fascinating question to ponder, indeed, and one that will likely continue to shape the legal landscape of community associations for years to come. These issues aren't going away.
That's all the time we have for this deep dive. Thanks for joining us.